by making sense of the messiness of somebody else's life, we are better able to make sense of the messiness of our own lives and our own stories and our own journeys in this world.
This is All About Jack, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, your host and the producer of the show. The following is the second and final part of an interview with Abigail Santa Maria about her debut book, a biography on Joy Davidman that's simply entitled Joy. Be sure to listen to the first part if you haven't already. It's available to hear online or download at allaboutjack.podbean.com. In the first part, the topics include how Abby became interested in Joy's life and about what the Davidman household was like growing up for Joy, as well as her first marriage to Bill Gresham. Today's show will look more at how Joy met Lewis, some factors that led to her divorce, and how she ultimately married Lewis twice. While this does cover a lot of ground, it does not go into how Joy didn't always make the wisest decisions as a Christian, which is, of course, in the book. But I do ask Abby again why she chose to include what some may think is too negative of a side to Joy Davidman in the book. Finally, because I recorded my interview in one sitting to divide into two parts later, there is no welcoming her back to the show. Just the next question. Well, now, we're going to seemingly jump a few years ahead, but I think there's some aspects that will get filled in by virtue of the question in regarding Joy, and that is, what influence did Lewis have on Joy before they ever met or she even wrote him?
Well, Joy and Bill moved out of New York City and moved to Ossining, New York, which is a little bit north of Manhattan, and started a family. David was born in New York City just before they moved to Ossining, and then Douglas Gresham was born while they lived in Ossining. And it was during this time that Joy started reading Lewis. She was isolated from her peers and from her family. She felt very isolated living outside of New York City and living in the quiet country. And she had more mental space. She was less busy, and she had more mental space to kind of think about the fact that she hadn't quite considered whether or not atheism was true. She was an atheist and a Marxist as a communist, of course, but she hadn't really backed up those claims. And Lewis made her realize that when she read Screwtape and Great Divorce. Lewis was becoming popular and soon would be on the cover of Time magazine, and his name was in the air. So that was the first kind of way that Lewis broke through to her. And then there was an experience when Bill, who was a very troubled man, he had clearly had post-traumatic stress after being in the Spanish Civil War, and he was an alcoholic, and he had a long troubled mental health history of suicide attempts and severe depression. He was working in Manhattan, and there was one night when Joy was at home in Ossining with her babies, and Bill called her up and said that he was having a nervous breakdown and he couldn't stay where he was, but he couldn't come home, and then he hung up the phone. Joy was at home alone, and she couldn't go search for him. She didn't know what to do. She tried calling him back. There was no answer. She lived in terror that he was going to attempt suicide again and that he was going to be successful. She suddenly found herself praying. She had no idea why, because she didn't believe in God. Then she did believe in God, and then she realized, you know, why am I praying? She thought, why am I praying? And then she realized she believed in God suddenly, very suddenly, that something broke through to her, and that she called it a moment of grace. And it took her a while to learn what that experience was about. At first, she realized there was a God, and so she went back to Judaism. She started studying Judaism, and she started studying religions, and she wasn't satisfied with Judaism. She wasn't satisfied with the law, especially. It didn't seem to jive with her experience of grace, of not having done something to have that moment, you know, transcendent moment that she had when Bill disappeared. And he He did not kill himself, by the way. Then he came back, and neither of them ever shared where he went, what happened. But that the recounting of that story became the occasion to recount Joy's spiritual conversion. And they both started reading Lewis after that, both Bill and Joy together. And Bill listened to Joy's account of what had happened, and he joined her in this religious search. And he had always been somebody, he had always been a searcher himself. So they both started reading Lewis and ultimately came to believe in Christ through reading Lewis. Joy goes into much more depth about this in her essay, Longest Way Round, which was published in a book called These Found the Way.
And of course, it was because of reading Lewis then that Joy became interested in possibly meeting him. And she had a reason to visit England to do some research. But that first trip to England, what was Joy's real motives?
First of all, I want to say that for the full story and in all the details and for the evidence, which is all in the endnotes, people should look to my book, because I think some of the things I'm going to say are a little bit broad and general. And it took a long time to make sense of this part of the story, because this part of the story became very complicated and convoluted and hadn't fully been explored before. And it was also ethically sticky. Joy's marriage to Bill was falling apart. She first wrote to Lewis in June of 1949, and they developed a great friendship. He had many correspondents, and she was one of them. And she stood out as one of the more brilliant, well-read, well-spoken correspondents. But on Joy's end, you know, she was at this point, they were living, she and Bill were living with their two boys in Stattsburg, New York, in this grand old farmhouse that they bought with the money from the sale of Bill's novel, Nightmare Alley, to 20th Century Fox. And she was even more isolated than she was before. They were in an increasingly unhappy marriage, and Bill was drifting away from Christianity. Joy was not. And she had this incredible correspondence with Lewis, and he was similar to a couple of men she had been sort of infatuated with before, or in love with, or had crushes on, or however you want to say it. Once in college with an older professor, and once with William Rose Binet, who was a poet she knew, and also much older. And as she had done for both the professor at Hunter and William Binet, she started writing love sonnets that were directed towards Lewis and filing them away in a file that she titled Courage. And she wanted to meet him. She desperately wanted to meet him. And she planned a trip to England. They had no money. The trip ultimately cost $900. She did have a story idea that she was going to research while she was there. But the real motivation, I mean, the real purpose of the trip was to meet Lewis. And so she did. 3 years after they began corresponding, she left Stattsburg. She left her two sons, David and Douglas, who were, I believe, 6 and 8 at the time, with Bill, her husband, and her cousin Renee was living with them at the time. And Renee's two small children were living there. And so Joy sailed to England in August of 1952 and met Lewis for the first time in September and stayed in England until January of 53. She returned briefly. In the meantime, Bill and her cousin had fallen in love. And it's a very long, complicated story with many more details that I'll let people explore in the book.
Well, now, there's a lot of other details that can be shared. But, of course, as you were noting about people getting more information from the book, as well as checking your notes as well as to, you know, how you can make the statements that you do or reveal the information, how do you know that? But one of the things that we know, and it has been known, although not everyone is probably aware of it, but Lewis did ultimately marry Joy not once but twice. But first I want to have you describe what their friendship was like before either got married for the first time to each other.
Their friendship began, like I said, with the pen friendship. When Joy came to England in 1952 for her first visit when she met Lewis, Lewis referred to her as an old and valued pen friend. They had been corresponding for 3 years at that point. And the friendship evolved over time. During Joy's first trip, she visited Lewis and his brother, Warney, at the Kilns. She stayed with them during the Christmas holiday. She did overstay her welcome a bit. She stayed for longer than she was invited, and she, Lewis said, talked from morning till night, and he said said the whole vacation was a shambles. He told friends in letters that she talked so much that he couldn't write or think, and the friendship, you know, suffered a little setback there maybe, but obviously continued to evolve. When she went back to the U.S., the correspondence picked up again, and then she moved to England permanently with her two sons when she left Bill. That was in November of 1953 when she left the U.S., and she moved to London and began seeing more of Lewis, and then a couple years later moved to Oxford. The friendship just grew and grew and grew as she was in England, and she began doing editorial work for Lewis. She was somebody he talked to, talked things over with. She helped him move when he moved from Oxford to become a professor at Cambridge. She helped him get settled into his new rooms at Cambridge. And that was a huge transition for him. It was a huge emotional transition. And Joy was there through it. She was a support and a rock and a friend who was steady, and I think that had a big impact. The real breakthrough in their friendship, I think, came when they worked on Till We Have Faces together, and that changed things. Joy helped Lewis write what he, you know, considered his finest novel, and he dedicated it to her. And then, like you said, they married twice. Joy legally needed help staying in the country, and marrying Lewis was one way of making things a lot easier, and he agreed. So they got married on paper only. He made that clear, very clear to his friends, the very few people who knew that they were getting married. And Joy continued to go on living in her own house in Oxford, and Lewis continued to go on living in his own house. But he would stop by her house, which was walking distance, and he would stay until very late at night. And people started talking, and, you know, rumors started spreading. And then when Joy fell and broke her hip and had x-rays taken and was diagnosed with terminal cancer, then Lewis married her again at her hospital bedside. And it still took him a while to admit that it was more than friendship. He wrote to some people around the time of that marriage that Joy clearly couldn't go on living alone while she had terminal cancer, and he wanted to bring her back to the Kilns to take care of her, but he didn't want her reputation to suffer, and so they needed to marry. And of course they were already married, but he hadn't told many people about that either. And meanwhile, Joy was writing to people saying, "We've been married for some time now." You know, it was clearly, you know, she very badly wanted a real marriage with him. She very badly wanted that. But it didn't take very long for Lewis to realize, once it became clear that he was going to lose her, that he was actually in love with her and He said, they say a rival often turns a friend into a lover. Thanatos, which is the Greek personification of death, is a most efficient rival for this purpose. So, and he said, we soon learn to love what we know we must lose. And so it was really once he thought that he was going to lose Joy, that he was able to fully openly admit to himself and to other people that he was in love with her.
Now, you had mentioned earlier at the very start of the first podcast about how Joy actually helped Lewis with some of his writings. I wonder if you might quickly summarize that aspect again.
On her first trip to England, she read the proofs of his O Hell volume, and he thanks her in the acknowledgments for that. And then she did a lot of typing work when he was in the final stages of his autobiography, Surprised by Joy. And so she did a little bit of editorial work on that. And then Till We Have Faces, the story of Psyche and Cupid had been something that Lewis had been working on for decades and had not found the right form for. And it was at the Kilns one night when Joy was visiting, they had a bottle of whiskey and they batted around some ideas, and the novel Till We Have Faces was born. And the next day, Lewis just wrote and wrote, and Joy typed it up and she gave comments, and then they went, had this back and forth, you know, incredible collaborative effort, and became this incredible novel that has not gotten the attention that it deserves. But then The Four Loves, you know, Lewis couldn't have understood love the way that he came to understand it when he finally wrote that book, without Joy's influence, without the friendship that turned into Eros. And then of course we wouldn't have A Grief Observed, which was written after Joy's death, without Joy. And that's a book that has a tremendous legacy. It's helped so many people who've gone through loss, the loss of a loved one, especially the loss of a spouse. And it's incredible to think that if Joy hadn't come into Lewis's life, that the world would not have that book. And the world very well, you know, may not have Till We Have Faces. And The Four Loves would not be what it is if it would have been written. It's a huge impact, even though they were only married for a few short years. Joy did go into a remission after her diagnosis, and they ended up having about 3.5 years together in a real marriage before she died. It's an incredible legacy.
Definitely it is. Also, in the first half of our interview, you addressed the question of why you provide such a transparent picture of Joy. I want to touch on that again, because some people may actually think that you're trying to hurt her legacy. Are you?
No, emphatically no. And I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to answer that question so emphatically. I am not trying to hurt her legacy. In fact, I'm trying to lift her legacy up, and I'm trying to give her her due. She has not gotten her due in history. You know, she's been forgotten as the great poet that she was. And I hope to illuminate her as a poet and a writer and a thinker, but also as a human being, as a real, genuine person with the good and the bad. You know, they live together, and she was human. She was flawed, and as we all are. So by writing about her flaws, in no way, shape, or form was any of my motivation to be sensationalistic or to demonize her or to slander her or to hurt her legacy at all. I really believe that we do no one any favors by sanitizing our subjects as biographers, and that by making sense of the messiness of somebody else's life, we are better able to make sense of the messiness of our own lives and our own stories and our own journeys in this world. And I also believe that her that showing her as a real human being is the only way that we can truly understand the purpose of redemption and of God's grace. If she was perfect, she would have had no need for Christ or for God, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have no interest in hagiography. I don't believe in it. I don't think it's right. And it's not the way that God wrote biography when he put the Bible together. And, you know, I think that for every person, whatever your vocation is, you can look at God and you can look at the Bible and you can somehow find something. You know, if you're a physician, you can look at Christ as the great healer, right? You know, and there's something that we can find that speaks to our vocation in the Bible and about how God would have us work in our vocation. And for me, as a biographer, I see the Bible as a compendium of many biographies. And like I said in the last podcast, you know, God didn't scrub clean the lives of the people he loved. He presented their full stories. And it's important that we see that, because we can't understand Christ and what he did on the cross and the story of redemption, the purpose of redemption, without flawed humanity.
Oh, very well said. Well, now, those interested in getting your book can obviously go to the usual places, but you have a website, if I'm not mistaken. Tell us where people can go online, what's there, or additional things that you plan to have there in the near future.
Yeah, my website is www.abigailsantamaria.com. You can find out, you can order the book through there, or of course on the usual channels of Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your local independent bookstore. And I'll also be posting events. I also have a Facebook page and Twitter at Abby's Tweets, ABBYS Tweets. So you can follow me at both places, my author pages under Abigail Santa Maria. And I'll be posting interesting things, maybe some things that didn't make it into the book. I'll be posting these podcasts on there. I'll be posting other interviews and reviews and interesting things about Joy and C.S. Lewis and about writing in general.
That information will also be in the show notes. People will have a direct link to that. Well, just a little bit ago, you were giving some summary aspects in terms of some of the aspects of Joy that people not as familiar with, especially, and may appear to be somewhat controversial to present. Moving from that to a more general aspect in terms of your book, what do you hope regarding the book, again, that's simply called Joy, either a key point or points that you hope people will take away from reading it?
I really believe that reading and writing biography is an attempt to map and study steps of people who lived meaningful lives so that we can better understand and guide our own. And I think Joy's story has a lot to teach us about love and faith and embracing ideals that transcend our temporal lives. And that's going to mean something different for each reader. So I won't say too much more, except that I think that everybody can get something out of studying this life, and I hope that it will speak to people where they are.
Okay, great. Well, Abby, I appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I hope you, the listener, have enjoyed this second and final part of my interview with Abigail Santa Maria. Her book, simply called Joy, is just releasing the first week of August 2015. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, your host for All About Jack, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. If you haven't heard the first part, then be sure to download or listen to it by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or the location where the audio files are hosted. That's allaboutjack.podbean.com. Whether you need to do that or not, you need to know that those locations are where to find the show notes as well as other previous podcasts. So let me repeat those locations. You can either go to EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Again, that's allaboutjack.podbean.com. At the Essential C.S. Lewis location, You can still get this podcast. Plus, I have a variety of other articles there as well. In addition to that, there's also a daily fact, quote, and quiz about C.S. Lewis. I hope you enjoyed today's show enough to want to share it with others. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online at EssentialCSLewis.com or at AllAboutJack.podbean.com. A recent show to consider is my chat with Dr. Don King about two books related to Joy Davidman. I've recorded that in one show. One of the books is a collection of poems by Joy he edited, many of them previously unpublished. And then the other title I discussed with Dr. Don King deals with discussing, or they would call it, a critical analysis of all of her writings. An earlier conversation with Don I reposted not long ago is about the letters of Joy Davidman that you will want to listen to as well. Finally, if you like biographies, I released in early June 2015 a roundtable chat with three Lewis scholars about three biographies on C.S. Lewis that came out in 2013. In this show, they reflect on the pros and cons of each, among other things. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info@EssentialCSLewis.com.